We have read the Economic Committee of the Senate to order at this time. Today's date is April 12, 1999. With that, we'd like to have a public hearing on Senate Bill 1242. Senator, it's very early. We are honored having you here today, okay? So I guess we are ready to hear the public testimony from you.
Mr. Chairman, the honor is mine. I appreciate the hearing on Senate Bill 1242, especially in view of the fact that we are going to be rather pressed for time for all the hearings that we need to do between now and the closing of our committee. Colleague, Senate Bill 1242 is an interesting opportunity, I believe. And let me just share a little background before we get into any of the specifics of the bill. Back in about 1930, there was a determination that the end of the Oregon Trail would be a good place to have a memorial to Lewis and Clark. And so there was an appropriation of some dollars, and there was some work done on a site in a park. And that site is up in the Dalles, Oregon, and exists there right on the one of the areas where Lewis and Clark actually have camped. And so this was going to be one of the perhaps architecturally overblown monuments of the 1930s, where they have a large pedestal and a huge towering structure that looks down upon people, and it never got beyond the pedestal stage, actually. They got some forms in the ground and some other things sort of died in that process. There was never any further appropriation. Well, with the renewed interest in the Oregon Trail and the anniversary of the expedition, there's just been an awful lot of interest in doing something that marks the ends of the exploration route. And as far as we know, there's no other plan that honors Sacagawea, or Sacagawea, as we were taught in grade school. And this would be an opportunity to do something in honor of the leadership that she showed in bringing the expedition across uncharted and perilous territory, and acting as an interpreter and scout and guide for the Lewis and Clark expedition. The interesting thing is that there are plans on the drawing board, and actually a bronze mock-up of the statue, and it would be done by the folks that have the bronze foundry in Wallawa, out in the eastern Oregon country. And the artist is building an international reputation, and the facility is already there, so with a relatively small appropriation, there might be access to quite a substantial federal appropriation that would be used to finish the process and complete the memorial and the grounds and the approaches and the signage and all the other necessary things that go with it. But it would be an opportunity for an economic development and a cultural opportunity, a recognition that I think is timely. It's certainly not something that you have heard of before, I think. This is something that points not only to the contribution that Sacagawea made to the expedition, but also just a recognition that without her, it probably wouldn't have been as successful. So that's the project from a gross overview, and what I'd like to do is answer any questions the committee might have, and then reserve an opportunity to bring back the artist, the proponents of the project, the architectural drawings, and give you an idea of what else might be in the plan. Because I am not as detailed on this project as I could be. And I'd like you to have the concept of the artist and the proponents from the community brought forward.
Okay. Any questions?
No.
Okay. Cochran?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you consider citing this in Umatilla instead of the Dalles? My question is, the good Senate president has this term called zero sum. Where does the money come from for this? Out of what do we take it?
You know, that's an excellent question, and I don't know how to answer that question at this point. I have been very critical of Christmas tree approaches to balancing our budget. I don't think it's a good idea. I've also been working very hard to try to build capacities in rural communities with economic development dollars. And we know that there will be $30 million in the president's budget, and that's corresponding amount in the governor's budget for capacity building distressed communities. This could be that kind of a project. Maybe this is one that doesn't get funded in this legislative session, but it certainly is one that ought to merit consideration just because of the contribution that this brave woman made as a fairly young woman in bringing, you know, at least a cross-cultural and cross-country opportunity. And, you know, you might look at that as the first steps of imperialism in the West, or you might look at it as hands across the continent. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at this thing. But this is certainly an opportunity for a community that has a Native American heritage, that honors their heritage, to make it a focal point. So there you have it. Don't know where the money comes from. That's the short answer, Mr. Chairman.
We have to be careful with multicultural because we might be accused of idolatry, according to that lecture we got the other day.
Just a lecture, Chairman. I remember that
responsibility.
I think this is a wonderful idea, and what comes to my mind is the educational value of this kind of project. And I think about the many, many, many Oregon children who years ago contributed their pennies and nickels and dimes, I understand, to erect the gold statue up there on top of the Capitol. And there just may be an opportunity to do something similar. Again, picking up on the educational value of what this woman contributed to Oregon's history, and wanting to make that known, more known, to Oregon's children.
Senator Lynn, Senator Gordley, that's an excellent suggestion. You know, and there's probably a dozen different ways for us to do something community-based or something regionally based. But Mr. Chairman, Senator Gordley, I appreciate the suggestion, and that's one I'll take back to the proponents.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Senator Duncan.
I can comment on that. It was the rebuilding of the Pioneer, and we put together a curriculum package to go with it about the Capitol and about the Pioneer. And so all the schools had a curriculum guide to mm-hmm. for their studies. And at basketball games, they lined up dimes and all sorts of things, and collected about 40. I always want to remind people to get this on the record so people don't forget it. Collected about 40-some thousand dollars. I think it cost $24,000. And that money, the balance, is sitting in the treasurer's office drawing interest. So when it comes time to do it again, the school children fill up. They left the mark to do some more things. But it was a great learning exercise. People who had never been to the Capitol before were studying about the Capitol and the Dome and the Pioneer. And so great.
There's a pot of money in the treasurer's office.
Yes.
Chairman Lim, I'm not sure that was long.
That's great.
Well, it's the if colleagues, if you have an opportunity, and this is off the topic, of course, but Mr. Chairman, Senator Duncan's reminder reminded me of something. We had a pretty nice day on Saturday afternoon. Weather was very clear, and I noticed that it was quite light even in the late afternoon. And as the sun set in the west, the statue of the Golden Man is perfectly lit by the setting sun. So if you haven't had that opportunity, get out of here before the sun completely goes down and take a look at that. Those children got their money's worth, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Duncan, I know we have a lot to do, but my little granddaughter just loves to go to Grandpa's office with the gold man on top. And during the campaign season, one of the candidates in our area, who's now a member, is still a member of the House, used the campaign brochure and showed the Capitol sinking, because of the expenditures. So here's the Capitol sinking in the ocean. And it just happened to be around the House. and my little granddaughter saw this and just was very, very upset. And what is it? Grandpa, look at this. And I had to bring her down here and drive her around to see if it's a going hand.
That's true. Yes, I think Senator Duncan was a contemporary of the Golden Pioneer, wasn't he?
I think so.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just concerned that that little girl knows that that is not Senator Duncan's personal bowling trophy. The Golden Man belongs to all of us.
Oh, don't worry.
But there has been a lot of criticism when you put the Golden Man over there spending so much money on the gold, but I think it was a good investment.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, this memorial to Sakakaway could be that kind of investment, and I appreciate the time that you've devoted with the committee.
Okay, any, do you have any idea how much will it cost? Since this in here really is a blank.
That's because I do not know what the number is, Mr. Chairman, and the I think the issue is whether or not we could coerce or convince our federal partners to pick up the lion's share of the cost. And we would hope there'd be something like a 90%, 10% match for that kind of a thing. Okay. This is a cultural opportunity, and it's there will be dollars appropriated during the observances of the Lewis and Clark festivities, and substantial dollars, and they'll be multi-state. So this would be an opportunity for us to work with federal partners and perhaps have a relatively low number in that blank.
Okay. Our time is running out, shortly, as you may know.
Yes, sir.
If we want to do something about it, I think we're going to get serious about this issue. And then did you plan to bring it up? Yeah.
Well, Chairman Lynn, in view of your generosity with the committee's time, I'll contact the proponents and let them know that they need to get all of the information to the committee as soon as possible.
Okay. We'll work with it here in that manner.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your hearing. I appreciate it very much. And members of the committee, I thank you for your attendance.
Thank you. And with that, I'd like to, if any other person like to testify on the Senate Bill 1242. If not, we will close the public hearing on Senate 1242 SC. And then what do we have next? I'd like to open a public hearing on the, what's this, SCR5? Mm-hmm. Yes, SCR5. Could you explain to us what the SCR5 does?
Yes, thank you, Chairman.
Okay.
Senate Conference Resolution 5 is a bill that extends the formal invitation to the President of the Republic of Korea to make an official visit to the State of Oregon. President Kim Dae-jung is the current President of the Republic. He has been to Oregon in the past, but never since he has been elected President. This bill has no revenue impact, and it has no fiscal impact. You have in your package, members, amendments and a handling growth bill. The amendments were strictly for formality. Each time the word South Korea appeared, it was used, it was corrected with the name Republic of Korea, and some of the language was expanded. It does not change the substantive value of the concurrent resolution that is before you.
What are the changes mostly in the amendment?
If you can find the engrossed version, you can see that line 20 A is included, and it mentions the fact that President Kim Dae-jung was imprisoned for political reasons for many years, and for this reason he's known around the world as the Nelson Mandela of the Republic of Korea. Then at line 23 on page 1, that statement has been deleted, and it has been replaced later in the bill where it has more meaning, where it is more appropriate. The remainder of the corrections on page 1 are simply to change South Korea to the Republic of Korea and to name the United States of America rather than this country. Line 30A on page 1A inserts the word degree after honorary doctorate to point out that President Kim Dae-jung has received an honorary doctorate degree from Portland State University. And line 31 has been amended to include the words, whereas an official invitation to President Kim Dae-jung to Oregon would enhance future relationships with the Republic of Korea. Going on to page 2 of the bill, the last amendment is in line 8, so that this paragraph now reads, and I will begin with line 7.
Okay.
Resolved that this resolution be sent to the President of the United States, to the members of the Oregon Congressional Delegation, to the Speaker of the Parliament of the Republic of Korea, to the Ambassador of the Republic of Korea to the United States, to the Ambassador of the United States to the Republic of Korea, and to the Korean Consulate General in Seattle.
Okay.
A lot of words.
Okay. By the way, the Korean, the Ambassador to the United States and the American Ambassador to the Republic of Korea, they are coming this coming Tuesday. Yes, they will be speaking in our chamber maybe 5 minutes and then move to the House member to speak over there. Okay. And then we will have a joint reception. So that will be
you were successful. Okay. You pulled this off, didn't you?
You didn't know that. Okay. Okay, so this is a big day for us, having two American ambassadors and Korean ambassadors there coming together.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they will have a budget.
And so, with that, and so are we ready to accept the amendment?
Are we in work session? Not yet.
Okay. So, it's okay. Anyone like to testify on Senate SCR 5? If not, we will close the public hearing on SCR 5 and we will open a work session SCR 5.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Concurrent Resolution 5.
Okay, Senator Gordley moves to accept the Dash 1 amendment to the Senate SCR 5. Is there no objection? Any discussion? Any further? Then I guess we are ready to. Senator Gordley?
I move SCR 5 to the Senate floor with a pass recommendation.
Amended.
As amended. Thank you.
Senator Gordley moves that the SCR 5 to the floor with a pass recommendation as amended. Any discussions? If not, call the roll.
Aye.
Okay.
Senator
Duncan?
Aye.
Senator
Pinter? Aye.
Senator
Gladway?
Aye.
Chair Lamb?
Aye. The motion carried. It's passed.
I forgot we have to be
easy on this. Let me see. Who should be the carrier? I should carry that.
You think the chair?
Okay, I think that since this has to do with the president, I would be honored to carry this resolution. Okay, that's one thing done. What's the next one? And with that, I would like to close our work session on SCR5 and open the public hearing. What's the number? Okay, I'd like to open a public hearing, SJM 10. Let me see, what's this SJM about? Can you give us a little update information?
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Joint Memorial 10 is a memorial urging the United States Congress and the President to use all appropriate means to resolve all issues of American soldiers and pilots who are still missing from the Korean War. You will notice in the memorial at lines 8 and 10 are some statistics telling you that during the Korean War, 5.7 million Americans served in the armed forces of this nation, that 54,246 American soldiers were killed in the war, 103,000 soldiers were wounded, and 8,177 of these American soldiers are still unaccounted for these 50 years later. This memorial asks that a copy of it be sent to the President of the United States, to the Majority Leader of the U.S. Senate, to the Speaker of the U.S. House, and to each member of the Oregon Congressional Delegation. You will also notice that there is no revenue impact and there is no fiscal impact for the Senate Joint Memorial.
Okay, and we have a gentleman here, Ed Hsu. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed Hughes representing the Coalition for Veterans Issues, which is all the veterans. I would like to take this moment to thank the committee for introducing this bill. This is an extremely important piece of legislation. And I think there are a lot of unanswered questions as to the missing and wounded, POWs in the Korean conflict. It was not supposed to be a war. You know, it was supposed to be a police action, but turned out to be a war. And it doesn't say in the bill on line 12 exactly how many Oregonians are still missing. I'd like to know that figure. I'm going to ask the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs if they would have that. They may not have that figure, but I will try to find out for the committee.
Okay.
Prior to the time the bill goes to the floor, if it does, and we'll work on that figure for you. But the numbers are unbelievable, you know, 54,000 plus killed, 103,000 wounded, and 8,000 plus unaccounted for. Those are terrible numbers. And the families who were so kind to let their loved ones go and to support them while they were over there really do need some closure. And closure comes from obtaining information as to what actually happened to a lot of these prisoners. And a lot of these soldiers and airmen that flew over there. We would like very much to know as much as we can. And this bill sends a message to Congress and to the President to use every resource possible, even including other nations, to get some closure on some of these questions. Important bill. The committee's foresight is profound in what they've done here to introduce this bill. So we thank you very much. And we thank you, Senator Lynn, for all the good work you've done.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Corporal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ed, I guess my concern is, I guess maybe the question's more appropriately asked Senator Lim, but has there been a improvement in our relations with the North Korean government, for instance, to the extent that this may be a more appropriate time to try to get that information rather than 10 years ago? Or
that's an excellent question, Senator Lim and Senator Corcoran. But I could refer to Senator Lim because he's traveled over there recently. Perhaps maybe he could answer it better than I. So that's right with you, Senator.
Oh, yeah.
I think the time is rising at this time. There has been a hostile relationship with the United States and North Korea. And U.S. putting pressure on them, make sure they don't develop nuclear weapons, make sure North Korea doesn't sponsor the worldwide terrorist action, and make sure that they don't develop any other threatening weapons and things like that. As long as they don't change, the relationship will be very volatile. But they need food. A lot of people struggling over there. They need help from the United States. I think it's a time is coming shortly. We are talking about the State Department, North Korea, talking about possibly opening a liaison office for the first time. And I think it is about time we open up this issue again strongly. I hope we can resolve. We need to bring every American remains stationed in North Korea. We need to bring them home. because of their relatives and children still living, husband or wife, they want them back. And I try to work with them, but as a state senator, I don't have much clout. But so what we can do, urging the Congress and the President to resolve this matter, this matter as soon as possible. You know, that's why I just introduced this here. Okay, any other questions and comments? If not, that's the end. Do we have any veterans here sitting with us today?
There's one in the back row, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much. I just want to make sure, yes, we recognize your service and we wholeheartedly thank you for the service you have rendered. Okay. Is any other person like to testify on FJM-10?
I'd like that gentleman to explain where he got that tan. They're not allowed in the building here.
Okay. Well, as long as I'm chair here, I will allow. Okay, we'll close our public hearing on FJM-10 and open a work session FJM-10.
Chair, I move that we adopt current witness joint memorial resolution 10 and send it forward with a BPAS recommendation.
Okay, Senator Duncan, that moves at the same joint memorial 10 be to the floor with a BPAS recommendation. Any other discussion? Not, we'll call the roll.
Aye.
Senator Duncan? Aye. Senator
Kushner?
Aye.
Senator
Borgley?
Aye.
Chair
Mann?
Aye. The XAM pass. Who is going to carry?
I'll be happy to.
You happy to? Okay.
Right.
Thank you. Then Senator Duncan will carry this memorial can. Okay. With that, I'd like to close the work session at AM10. What's the next one? 950. I'd like to open a public hearing of Senate Bill 950. And if there's any, let me see. Okay. Why don't you explain to us what this Senate Bill 950 does?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Senate Bill 950, you will notice, has no revenue impact and has no fiscal impact. It basically does three things. First of all, it designates the month of May each year as Asian American Heritage Month. Secondly, it encourages the State Board of Education to develop a curriculum to promote the awareness of Asian Americans in our Oregon history. And it requires school districts to designate time for instruction and activities during school hours in commemoration of Asian Americans in Oregon history. And third, it requires the Commission on Asian Affairs and the Oregon Heritage Commission to coordinate their efforts statewide for celebrations of Asian American Heritage Month.
Okay, that's it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, with that, I'd like to call Angie Kolasdin, my friend of mine from Eugene, and thank you very much for coming over. I haven't seen you some time.
I've been retired?
Well, not tired, though.
Not tired.
I'd like to welcome Angie.
Thank you.
Were the Commission of Asian Affairs?
Yes, I used to.
Not at this time, though?
Not at this time.
Well, thank you very
much. I was raised in this year, though.
Okay. So you can retire, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Yes, but would you, as you know, we'll just state your name first, and then who you are, and then may proceed.
I'm Angie Koryas-Dean from Eugene, and I've worked with the Asian Council to present the Asian American celebration that has been a yearly event for 14 years in Eugene. And we did this because we felt that there was not enough exposure. The Asian presence was not very visible to the general public. And the reception has been very good. It has grown and grown. And although I was on leave for a couple of years while I was a commissioner, I've gone back and we're preparing the 15th annual. The problem that we faced there was the lack of visibility of our Asians. And when I was organizing the Philippine American community in Eugene, my sense was that the Filipino Americans do not really want to participate in their civic duties because they feel that they do not really belong. They're just like guests here. And consequently, they don't even have their telephone numbers listed. And the children feel even worse. And I think that the Asian American Heritage Month will bring that visibility that they need for the children, which the children have been what we've been focusing on with the Asian celebration. And I think this is very, very needed because the Chinese contribution, the Filipino contribution, the Korean contribution, and all of those contributions would make our children feel that they do belong. And perhaps it would break that bond that blocks the Asian families from participating actively in civic affairs. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And hold on. Any questions? Okay. If not, thank you very much. Even your volunteerism at the season has been great. Even you led a delegation from our state to Philippines, and then bring our state into a higher level in the Philippine country. And the contribution you made to the state has been immense, and I just want to commend you for that.
Thank you, sir.
And also, I somehow agree with you that the many Asians feel here as a guest, and they need to feel the ownership of the community, of the country, state, and the country. You're hoping with this Asian American Heritage Month, they feel home here. They're part of the great process.
Thank you
very much.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we can't let her leave without acknowledging that the food there is incredibly good, and the taiko drummers, Japanese taiko drummers, are amazing. An amazing celebration.
I would like to inform you all that they have made me the liaison for the consulate. And we are going to be getting more connections with the different consulates so that we can bring better and even better entertainment and better food and better crafts to help the state of Oregon.
Okay, you might be able to help for the coordinating Asian safety demands,
We'd be very glad.
Since you already have some experience in the Eugene area.
Be very glad to help.
Yes, Senator Duncan.
Can you see that they have my favorite Korean food shirt?
Yeah. Don't get them any American food, whatever you do.
Bulgogi?
Bulgogi?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's okay. Yes, thank you.
I became a connoisseur of that.
Okay. Peter Leo, the Chairman of Asian Commission. Welcome.
The Chair of the Commission, Asian Commission.
The politician.
Well, you're talking about Korean food, and have you tried the Italian Chinese? We have that in my restaurant.
Okay.
I want to talk about the ownership that Senator Ding alluded to. I've been here since 72. I feel the ownership of being American, Asian American, but a lot of my friends do not have that. And from my experience, they feel they are the second-class citizen. And I said, why? Because they said that this is a Caucasian America. They feel this is a rule and dominated by the Caucasians. which is not true, but that's what the perception is. And I feel that if we have this bill passed, Senate Bill 950, that help to instill an idea that this is America of diversity. This is America that you can feel ownership. You can feel you are the owner of this country. And I heard some opposition based on the fact that this is the first time has been done legislatively, and may not be necessary to do it this way, because the other minority groups like black and Hispanics, blacks, and do not have this in the bill. And they said, well, why Asians? And I want to speak from my own personal experience that the Asians visibility of Asians in civic affairs is very little, and so we need to encourage them. And the only way to encourage them is to show them that we really care their participation in the public affairs and public process. And this is one of the symbolic way to show them. And that's why I really support this as a chair. And let me tell you one more fact here is the Asian Commission has been exist for 3 years, but the application to apply for the Asian Commission has been a very small number. And I have a listing here provided to me last week from the governor's office. This is all the applicants to the Asian Commission. And see how many names here. Not too many here. That shows that there's some problem here. There's a problem we need to look at. Why many Asian Americans are not interested. And I think this Senate Bill 950 is a good starting point for us to expanding or for help the Asians to bring them into the mainstream, bring them to into participation in the mainstream society.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Okay. Cynthia Mounds.
Yes. Welcome, Cynthia.
Good afternoon. My name is Cynthia Mount. I'm pleased to be here, and I would like to thank you for having me. I come from the Douglas County, Roseburg specifically, and I support the Bill 950 because of a little background in Roseburg is a small town. I come from a county that is 98,000 in population, and Roseburg is only about between 18 and 20. I was one of the people who started an Asian group there, which was called Asian Pacific American Council. This was under the leadership of another lady who is a Malaysian. Unfortunately, it did not grow. It died. And I wanted so much to revive this. I had an organization there, the Filipino organization, and we have survived against all odds. The community is known to be more, I don't know if I could say this word, but they said it used to be a redneck town, but not anymore. A lot of our people, the Asians, are having a hard time assimilating in the community to get organized and get recognized and be visible in the community is what the Asians there are clamoring for. And I thought that maybe if I support this bill and be the voice of the Asians in the South, it would greatly help them assimilate in the community, get education in both sides, and be a better citizen in the community.
Okay.
That's all I can say.
Thank you. Well said. Any questions? Thank you so much. Real good. And this is not just not Asian. This is all American.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would add that I've been involved in a couple of their different meetings, and they are going right after things down there, getting it done, and they're a real addition to our area, and they cover everything from professional folks to just common persons, retirees, young folks, just in general. They've got a real good group.
Just to give you an idea, Mr. Chair, a very able lady, the executive director of the Art Center down in Roseburg, she started a festival that she called a cultural festival. And this began in September of last year. She brought everybody in, all Asian Americans, all ethnic groups, the Germans, the Scottish, the Irish, and the Jewish. They all grouped together, and even the Asians. And it was such a very fulfilling event that brought us all together in one community, sharing our cultural and ethnic experiences.
Okay. Thank you very much, Annie. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other person like to testify on this Senate Bill 950? Okay, just come on down.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Sorry I'm late. Honorable Chairman Senator John Lim and Senator Gottlieb, Senator Cochran, and Senator Fisher. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to testify. Support Senate Bill 950, designate May of each year as the Asian American Heritage Month. The purpose is, I just want to raise those purposes to support this bill. Number one, promoting mutual understanding between the Asian community and American mainstream society. Two, presenting the voice of the Asian community to the government of the state of Oregon with respect to social, political, economic, education, and cultural problems. Three, supporting and encouraging Asian Americans to actively participate in the political activities of the state of Oregon to promote the welfare of the Asian community and enrich the community at large. Number four, consolidating Asian Americans' conviction of the democracy in order to safeguard human rights. Therefore, we respect proposed to designate May of each year as the Asian American Heritage Month. To further his proposal and implement the above purposes, we suggest taking the following measures. One, supporting study and research on the social, political, economic, educational, and cultural problems of interest and concern to the Asian community. Number two, participating in the state legislature meeting and hearing and joining the discussions on problems concerning the Asian community. Three, collecting and publishing the above-mentioned study and research report. Four, inviting influential Asian celebrities and experts from all walks of life to discuss the current problems we are facing, organizing forums, and submitting opinions and comments to the Oregon legislature and government. I'm also requesting the governor to appoint a representative from the Oregon Commission of Asian Affairs to the Oregon Economic Development District International Advisory Board, ORS 285A131, provides that one member of the International Trade Commission appointed by the governor, governor be a member of the Commission on Asian Affairs. Appointing this representative is a vital step because according to the study released in March 98 by U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, Robert Rubin, Oregon shifts a larger share of its export to Asia than any other leading export state. Asia is the largest market of U.S. and Oregon trade. I think if this bill will pass, it will be very significant to the Asian community.
Okay. And thank you very much. Any questions? If not, the last, that's it. Paragraph number 5 will be discussed in the Senate Bill 961.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know I was late. I'm sorry.
Okay. So this is the 950 concerning the Asian Heritage Month alone, and the Senate Bill 961 will be discussing possible one member into that category.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. So appreciate it. Okay, you have a person like to testify on Senate Bill 950? If not, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 950.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I'm looking at, I like the concept of the bill. I have the concerns, and I don't see the Department of Education represented with this today. I'd like to know from the Department of Education, the impact of trying to put 3A and B together. So I'd like to hear from that.
Okay.
The problem is when you write something like this, it looks easy here, but I know from the other side that it's quite an impact. How do you get it done? And I have to be honest with you, though. Certainly have a little problem with legislative mandates in this particular area. I think you have to get those things in the, you have to work through the Board of Education through the curriculum goals. And so rather than you're putting together a particular curriculum, that you need to check to see where the, I'm just looking at each of the curricular areas. Is there something in there that deals with the Asian community? So I'd like to hear from the department on the impact of this on here.
Ready?
Which others are interested in that as well?
I would see.
Yes.
Okay.
Which phrase are we talking about now? Which
line 11?
It's encouraged. It's not required for that part. That's required under the bottom, right? Okay. I think it's appropriate. We should hear from them. I think it's our part neglected, not required.
Yeah, I think one of the things we've done is steer from the agency's office.
Sure.
It should be here, that's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
We don't want them here, and I'd like to be able to call out and say, is somebody looking into this? And I think we, that's
okay.
All of our worried about the lobby, and I want them here to answer questions for me.
Okay. Okay. I think so far we will call them. And we will have another public hearing on this year, and then we will see where it's moving. With that, did I close public hearing already? Okay. We will hear from the Department of Education on this year, so we will see where it's moving into next time. Okay, with that, I'd like to open a public hearing on this is the last one, right? Senate Bill 961. So why don't you give us what the 951 does?
Sure. Okay.
Okay.
Members of the committee. Senate Bill 961 requires that two members of the Asian of the Commission on Asian Affairs be selected from representatives of the Legislative Assembly. It increases the coordination between the Economic Development Department and the Commission on Asian Affairs. It requires that the Commission on Asian Affairs advise and consult with the Governor. It requires that a member of the Commission on Asian Affairs also serve as a member of the International Trade Commission.
Finally, it increases the term of the members of the Commission on Asian Affairs from 2 years to 3 years. Currently, two of the members on the Commission on Asian Affairs are appointed by each of the legislative bodies. This bill changes that so that those two members will be members of the two legislative bodies. That is the change. We do have a proposed amendment to this bill, which I will provide for each of you. Long list of witnesses who would like to provide testimony today on
951. Okay, today, 951, we will establish a public hearing that we might not be able to have a work session today. I think it's more than several amendments need to be done on this bill, so we will not have a work session today. We'll continue to have a public hearing on that one. At this time, I'd like to call Andy, okay, come on over, you are the number one list here. Okay.
Okay.
Why don't you calm the Cynthia Mount together also? Cynthia, why don't you come sit together?
Mr. Chair, could I have permission to join us?
If you wish.
Yeah, I would like to.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And, hold on. Senator, would you like to speak first?
Mr. Chair, I volunteered, Senator Bill Fisher from Roseburg, District 23, and I volunteered to come and lend support to Ms. Mounts here, not realizing that she was going to fare up by herself her first experience, but she did very well on her own, but I wanted to be here to let you know that we had worked, and she had called me, and we'd worked to try to get some type of a little broader representation around the state. She felt kind of isolated as about the only rural member of the committee, and so she called and asked me to have some kind of an idea here or something. I suggested perhaps we would make an amendment that would at least require one representative from each of the U.S. representative districts, which would at least put five members outside around the state. So I'm going to let her go ahead.
Okay.
And
thank you very much.
I wanted you to know that I supported her fully and that she's doing a good job down there in Roseburg.
Seems to me that she's well qualified to serve as commission herself.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Senator is saying that someone from Roseburg could sit on this very qualified.
But she is already on there with my pleasure to help support her and her appointment through that.
Thank you.
Living proof.
I think I will stick on to that also.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So with that, then the since you are sitting next to the senator, I think I will let you go first then, okay?
Mr. Chair, I would like to yield my time to Angie first, and then I will go after.
Okay. So that sounds fair to me.
I would apologize to Angie for butting in here.
That's all right. You're perfectly welcome to do that.
Actually, I've already spoken to this committee, but I don't think that Senator Duncan was in that committee when I addressed the Senate when I came back from the Philippines and I'm not sure.
I haven't heard on the committee before.
Senator Gordley was here and Senator and the chairman. When I was a commissioner, I did two things. I established the Philippine Chamber of Commerce of Oregon to promote trade and tourism between Oregon and the Philippines, because that was the legislative mandate of the commission. And there was no such thing. When I took the idea all across, all down the highway, I-5, to the different Filipino communities there, I asked them, what do you need? And they said, yes, we need a Chamber of Commerce. And so we formed one, and they were very, very They were earnestly and eagerly wanting to help the state, because I represented the state in to promote trade. All right, so the second thing I did was I took, officially, I took a trade mission to the Philippines, and I asked the help of the different consular office officials that I knew. And one of the things that I found out in my research was that what was most effective was an instrument which is not really comprehended by the Western mind, at least not in the ICC. And these are supposed to be the experts. And the prime example of this was something that has been a point of controversy in the state, and that, and this is the Memorandum of Understanding. Now, I was given to understand way back that it was not a legal document. When I broached the idea to the ITC, to the ICD, the Development Department, of which the ITC is the Advisory Commission, they told me that it costs too much money, that it takes a long, long time to do, and that we, the Oregon, had already had very much experience in this sort of a thing, and nothing ever came out of it. Well, that was mind-boggling to me, because from the other side of the Pacific, I was hearing the MOU is it. You open trade with an MOU. And the Western mentality in the department could not understand the fact that even though the MOU is not a legal document, it is a diplomatic exercise that opens doors, because it provides a sense of goodwill without any onus of having to commit money, which most third world countries cannot anyway commit. So they don't want to. So I found out that Massachusetts had an MOU. So I got connected with Massachusetts, and they sent me one, just two pages. And they said it was very effective. And but this did not, despite this, our International Development Department said that it was not valid because there was no way to gauge how much money was produced from this MOU. Well, I'm going to tell you that our trade mission to, our Oregon trade mission to the Philippines, within 4 months of the trade mission, we had already exceeded $26 million of commerce, just in 4 months. And it took, like, 2 days for that. The MOU did not take 3 years. See, what they were talking about in the department was a sister city agreement. I found out later that there was no MOUs. They had no experience with MOUs, and that's why they didn't know anything about it. But one thing that they did say was, if it's not a legal document, why sign it? And it is because it is not a legal document that it works. Because when you have a non-legal document on top-level positions, the goodwill that is projected through makes it very much easier for trade mission people. When I took the trade mission there, there were two businesses that had been to the Philippines several months before and had already come back home. They had already spent their capital, had come back to Oregon. Nothing was accomplished. When we went there with the MOU, the door suddenly swung open, and they were right there and then appointed to be in one became management for environmental protection because of his expertise in Oregon. He had been there earlier, knocking on doors, not getting anywhere. This is what an MOU can do, and yet the department refused to acknowledge this. And they just had a mental block. And even though the University of Oregon had 4 months before had already a state MOU with the University of the Philippines, we were still being told in the Commission of Asian Affairs that this was not an MOU was not the instrument to work with. What they did come up with was a proclamation, which was word for word the MOU. But they just took away from that the title MOU and the address, United States. And they called it a proclamation, and I went to the Philippines with this. We were received by the ambassador at the embassy because staff members of the embassy, commercial staff members, were Oregonians. And they were very pleased to see us. And so they were, as a matter of fact, the ambassador escorted us to the palace to meet with the president. That was how, much they helping us with assistance. And when I showed the ambassador the proclamation, he said, this is inappropriate. So I ended up using the MOU, but I was not forgiven by the department. And to me, this is just one example of the lack of sensitivity to the Asian way of doing things that is absent from the experts here in Oregon on trade. These people are born and raised here. They're expert in banking and other things, but they don't have that Asian sensibility. And this is needed. And this is what the commission can provide, besides which the commission has the backing of the communities. And when we need money for entertainment, for whichever delegation comes from Southeast Asia, it's the community that can put forward. And this is less cost to the state. The whole trade mission cost the state one coffee book and generated $26 million of commerce. This is the big example I have from my own experience. And with the backing of the community, so much can be saved, so much can be saved for the state in for expenses that the state would be having to expend. And this is why I think it is very, very important for the commission to have a seat in the ITC, because they can give this feedback. Thank you very much.
I do appreciate
the
testimony. Okay,
Cynthia. Excuse me. I have this. When I spoke the last time to you, this wasn't ready yet. This is the report.
Okay. This is for us or just to look? Okay, thank you. It's a very close to the study here. Okay, Cynthia,
okay? Mr. Chair, I would like to give you a little background. I was appointed Commissioner of Asian Affairs in April of last year, 1998, and I'm even barely a year in the commission. But I came in the commission at a time when there were lots of adjustments and chaos and everything, and I am just starting as a new kid in the commission. I studied and read the bill creating the OCAA before I even applied for the position. And I do understand that the mission of OCAA is to promote trade and commerce between Oregon and the countries in the Pacific Rim. When I started in this position, I went back to Roseburg, and I tried to work in my own little way, in our own organization. I had to negotiate and had a agreement with the Umpqua Community Development Corporation. This nonprofit corporation gives
loans to low and medium income people over there who has at least a business idea or any business that they are in now, and they will help these people to get into business and get themselves self-sustained. They will put these people into an eight-week seminar and then release the money after the seminar. The seminar will consist on training them on business development, licensing, bookkeeping, and all that stuff. Two couples from our organization graduated last month, and we were so happy for it. Just these two couples. I would like to see the commission open up trade for them to really enterprise as new entrepreneurs and maybe in the future get into exports and imports in Asia. And that is why I am here to support this bill. But I think that the communication between OCAA, the OEDD, and the ITC is very important to facilitate everything. On the other side, I have another little amendment that may not be the focus of this bill right now, but because there's already an amendment going on with this bill, I would like to raise this amendments to the committee.
That's fine. You're doing great. Just tell them how you wanted to get around the state.
We just praying to him, I need help. I have proposed on section 1, line 20.
Okay.
It's the number 5, that appointments to the commission shall be made to ensure representation of Asian Americans in Oregon, geographically distributed in all U.S. districts in the state of Oregon. And I would like the definition of Asian Americans to be in there,
okay,
which means a resident of the United States of America who is of an Asian ancestry of the Asian countries in the Southeast, South and East, including Syria and Persia, only in the West.
Okay.
I mentioned specifically Syria and Persia because right now there are two commissioners sitting in the commission who represent the Syrian community and the Persian community.
Okay.
On section 2, line 23 and 24, because of already the membership of the commission is such that I believe this will affect the mission or the definition of the mission to promote trade and tourism between this state and the Asian countries of Southeast, Southeast, including Syria and Persia. Originally, it is only Pacific Rim, but there's already people in the commission sitting right now representing Syria and Persia.
Okay. Excellent. Any questions? Okay, I have one. When you're talking about the U.S. district, in all U.S. districts in the United States of America, in Oregon, what that means? We have a 5 congressional district.
That's what
you mean, a 1 person each congressional district?
That's what I mean.
Okay. At the same time, most of the Asians, maybe 90% plus, live in Portland and the Willamette Valley area. Maybe at Eastern Oregon, very few Asians there. And then 1 representative over there might have some problem realistically.
We can probably make adjustments, but right now, Mr. Chair, there's a total 10 members sitting in the commission, and 7 of them are from Portland. 2 are from Corvallis, and there's only 1, myself, in the southern region.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I might, because of the size of the population, that 1 person in the 5th District, for instance, would literally stretch from the Pacific Coast clear up and through the whole eastern part of Oregon, the southern and eastern part of Oregon. The 4th District would be one that, for instance, if Ms. Mounts was continued in that capacity, that would represent part of southern Oregon, but extend up well into the Willamette Valley toward Albany. So you'd be getting a heavy concentration in there and very little, actually, in the outlying district. The other Senate district is a 3 that goes from about Troutdale somewhere there, about over and covers the northern part of Oregon, over to about the, I'm guessing, around Pendleton area, possibly into Enterprise or somewhere around in there. Then you have the 2 districts for the North Coast and the western part of the northern part of Oregon, and then basically the heart of Portland. So you'd be getting at least 3 of those members would have good solid roots in the Willamette Valley, if not be totally in the Willamette Valley. And then that would still leave about 3 or 4 other ones that could be concentrated in the Eugene to Portland through Willamette Valley, or however it was looked upon. So I think it could be a good thing, and at least appear to be a bit more representative of the state. And I think that's what you were trying to get.
Okay.
Thank you for helping.
Well, that's all right. I hope I'm helping enough.
I'm not very interested, Nathan.
Cynthia, you have a real lieutenant representing you down there. Okay, anyway, this is not a work session at this, so we will seriously consider your proposal, and we will hear more data from other members where this leading into will find out.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Cindy. I appreciate it. Yes,
I'm going to have to leave. I'll get to everyone, but I will be supporting the bill.
Okay, thank you. Glad to hear that.
Okay,
I'd like to call at this time Cheeto again, and also Vincent Fong, and Shireen, you'd like to sit there? Come on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome again.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to tell you, you know the procedure by now.
Yes, thank you to the members of the committee. You can hear from the NG's testimonial that she pointed out one thing is the department, OEDD, lack of Asian sensitivity. And we were advised, after she came back, we were advised not to disassociate with her. And so she received sanction. And she was blocked when she reapplied for being commissioned. She was blocked to become a commission. That's why we have another lady from Roseburg, Cynthia, to take her position because she was blocked. So that means you don't listen to the authority, then you are sanctioned. So that's the result. And I'm here, and I anticipate that 3 months from now, when my term is expired, I'll be sanctioned too. So that's why last time I was emotional to say about partition politics. That's the reason for it, because I feel a lot of pressure. I feel a lot of, unhappiness. You know, what's going on here? You know, this is not a country. But, okay. So let's go. And the Senate bill, they create, P42, they create the Commission on Asian Affairs as a portion on trade and economic development. That was different from the creation of a Commission on Black Affairs and Commission on Hispanic Affairs, because they don't have that portion in the Senate bill. But we have that portion. But according to government's office, even though we have that portion, but don't believe it. We believe that the Asian Commission should not be different from the Hispanic Commission, should not be different from the Black Commission. Your role is to do advocacy. That is your role. That's what we have been taught. That's what has been many, many times. And I'm surprised that there are no one from the governor's office here, because I don't know why. We had last Friday, and the governor's office said that this bill would not be signed. The governor will not support this bill. And don't waste your time. So, you know, just this bill will not be signed. So I, with this frustration, I just want to point out that...
Thank you very much. Was that a conversation that you had with someone from the governor's office?
Yeah, Annabelle.
All right.
Who did you talk to?
Annabelle.
I haven't heard from them yet.
And also, my executive director went to see Katie Cooper and Annabelle. They indicated to her and that they would not, the governor would not support this bill. And also, my executive director, K.O. Snell, comes back and say, Peter, what do you do behind the governor's office? They told you not to do that. They said, Senator Lin is innocent. She said that. He is innocent. That means, Peter, you are the one that initiated this bill. You are the devil. So,
Peter, my suggestion at this point, let's not point at this time.
Sure.
Let's talk in a constructive manner.
Sure.
We all have a different opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's get on to the point and let's move on.
Okay. Let me point out a couple of points here. They point out one good thing here is the why we need to have a representative from the Asian Commission to sit on the ITC. And my answer is, there's some other answers, but my answer is Senate Bill create a requirement for us to promote trade, and this is a mandate from the state passed by the governor. So that's why, as lecturer speaking, it is not really within the law that we try to get this position. And also because not because of my personal or anything, it is because I think it's for the future Asian Commission to be able to help the state and to help the state to promote trade with Asia. I think that something that we can do and we can do well. The Asian Americans, many Asian Americans here in this country or in this state are from Asia, and they had a cultural background there, and they want to do a historical background, you know, to help us to be a facilitator between this state and Asian countries. I think, and take away the emotion, and I think they would be very helpful. So that's why I earnestly hope that the committee support this bill. And I think another reason for me to support this bill is the OEDD is understaffed in terms of dealing with Asia. We are only one person that deal with that. And OCA, Oregon Department of Agriculture, another person. So we have two people that deal with Asia. And that's not adequate to do that. So the shortage of staff and require that, I think if we can help what we own, OEDD, I think that we can do that. But in the past 3 years, since the creation of Asian Commission, always has a one-way street, because the OEDD, when they need help, they tell us, come to help. And but we have never been a key player in the OEDD or ITC. We have been told to work for them when they need help, but we have never been empowered to help. So if we have a kind of dialogue, we have a communication with ITC, and we won't have the problem like the NG has gone through. So I think that will help to eliminate the conflict. So I fully support this and hope that the members of committee for this tour. Thank you.
Okay, so who will be the next?
I will.
Okay.
Chairman Lin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Shireen Farahi, and I am the head researcher of the Oregon-China Trade Advisory Group. Now, I wrote my speech with the International Trade Commission report on international representation and market assessment issued June 1998 in mind. And I hope the committee does not mind, Mr. Chair, and the committee does not mind if I do a little bit of quoting from the report with regards to time. Are we okay on time?
We don't have a lot of time.
I don't have a lot of quoting anyhow.
Yes.
But I can. Please feel free to stop me whenever you'd like. Okay, I have three main points I'd like to bring to your attention. And I also support Bill 951. First of all, my first point is that the International Trade Commission must operate in keeping with the philosophy under which it was created. And now I'd like to read something from the ITC report that supports what I've just said. In Schedule A, the background of the International Trade Commission, I'd like to quote, "The committee was created to determine how the state of Oregon could take steps to maintain the success of its businesses in exports and other international trade activities and to evaluate the effectiveness of the state's international trade activities." And then I'd like to go down to the second paragraph and read, "In addition, the commission's scope of activities was broadened to include advising governmental bodies, agencies, and private persons on the development and implementation of state policies and programs relating to international trade, setting policy for and monitoring programs relating to and expanding international trade for the International Division of the Economic Development Department." Now, what I'd like to say here with this first point of mine is that these quotes to me translate to meaning that if there needs to be some kind of remedying of how the process works with the International Trade Commission, if there are any new policies that need to be implemented, then perhaps they should be implemented. And I feel in this regard, because 54% of our trade is with Asia, we do need to have a member of the Asian community, or the OCAA, on the ITC board so that we can make educated decisions with regard to how to, for instance, operate a trade center in China or establish trade relations with other countries in Asia. So I feel that this is very, very important. My second point that I would like to make is that allowing an Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs seat in the ITC will improve communication between the two groups. And I'd like to say here that the extent to which the ITC can communicate directly with Oregon's ethnic commissions gauges its ability to understand and intelligently direct Oregon's international trade relations. I'd like to read one other passage from the document, and I quote, "In the context of this continued globalization, the Oregon International Trade Commission believes the state of Oregon should provide strategic assistance and commit resources to help Oregon enterprises to succeed in the increasingly globalized economy." And in this regard, this to me represents that, this to me means that we need a representative to assist in this endeavor of establishing better trade relations. And also this kind of endeavor will, we will have better better communication between the two groups. And another point I'd like to make is that the governor's roundtable process can be assisted in this kind of in this endeavor, because there will be a balanced view provided. Not only will the business leaders of the business community be talking, be giving their own opinions about how to trade with Asia, but also someone who is on a commissioner on the ITC can also indirectly or directly answer questions and address concerns that the business community member leaders may have. And I'd like to read off of Schedule E from the ITC report, and this is my last quote. "The commission believes that the roundtable format is an open and effective way for interested parties to communicate their interests to the governor. The roundtable format brings together people to sit in sectoral roundtables. Participants from the same sector discuss among themselves the international business problems and opportunities they see in business and attempt to reach agreement on what they want to communicate orally to the governor." Then sit down a little bit. "And the assumption is that the governor, having been made aware of the most important concerns of the most vocal participants in the roundtable setting, will be more efficient and effective in carrying out his international missions." So I think that if the roundtable process can be assisted by this, then this will be very good for the governor when he goes traveling too for his international relations and making connections with the international community. And then my final point is that establishing an OCAA seat in the ITC will create a precedent that other ethnic commissions can follow as appropriate. I know there are some concerns about why should the Asian community, why should the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs first go into the ITC? Why them? Why not the Hispanics or the Africans or another group? Why not? And my answer to that is, as I said before, 54% of our trade is with Asia, and that is a huge number. And so just with Asia. And so we need to have someone in there immediately right now to help us effectively direct and allocate our resources in trading with Asia. And then other groups, other ethnic groups can have their representatives come in as they see fit personally. I just think right now it's important to establish a precedent that other groups can follow. Improve overall communication. The ITC will reach maximum effectiveness from this kind of relationship if a representative from each ethnic commission is in the ITC. And then finally, the beginning of trade relations with various areas of the world will benefit greatly from effective dialogue initially, aiding the governor in his international trips and paving the way for numerous international trade relationships. So, in short, having a representative from the ITC on each from each ethnic group will help the governor a lot in what he does when he goes abroad and paves the way for better and more improved international trade relations. And so I support, like I said, I support Bill 951. And one more thing I wanted to say. When we have people in the ITC who are from the OCAA, they need to have Asian expertise. They cannot just, have the Asian blood. They need to have lived in Asia, grown up in Asia, or have studied Asia, preferably grown up in Asia. But they need to be Asian experts, China experts, Japan experts, Korea, wherever else in Asia. They cannot just have the blood because otherwise the purpose is defeated. We need to have the Asian eyes, the Asian perspective and point of view in what the ITC does. And that is very, very important. That determines the effectiveness of having an Asian representative in the ITC to begin with. Thank you very much. And if you have any questions.
By the way, there is one Asian eye in the International Trade Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mr. David Chen is the member at this time with this group together.
Is Mr. Chairman, is he now what is his position in the his profession?
He is a banker now.
Okay, he was elected to the ITC though, not having anything to do.
That's right.
Yeah, not necessarily because he is Asian. Just yeah. I just think it's important to establish a president.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Mr. Kwong?
Yeah.
Mr.
Chairman, in lieu of the time constraint, can you allow me at least 5 minutes?
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. My name is Vincent Kwong. I represent the Chinese American Association of Commerce. I'm not testifying from experience, and I take along and the two Filipino ladies before me. What I'm going to present is just a rational analysis of what I read from the bill, so I cannot amuse you with anecdotes tonight, Peter. So I have a particular interest in commenting on just the Section 3 of the Senate Bill 951, namely the proposal of acting a representative from the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs as member in the International Trade Commission, that is the ITC. And I'm fully supportive of this amendment, but in pondering my reasons, I need to address the three fundamental challenges that may be posed by any opposition party. Because in preparing my speech, I heard some opposition opinions. So what I'm going to present is to address to these opposite opinions one by one.
Okay.
So question number one, will the membership of the ITC be oversized as a result of admitting one representative from the Commission on Asian Affairs? So opponents of the amendment may caution that while admitting one representative from the Commission into the ITC is not a big deal, it may trigger the demand of other minority people for representations in the ITC resulting in an oversized membership difficult to manage. But this is my opinion. Although there are many minority people in Oregon, their representations are broadly summarized by the categories of the races rather than by their individual ethnic backgrounds. There is just one Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs representing the Chinese, the Koreans, the Japanese, the Vietnamese, Filipinos, and other Asian people. And there is just one Oregon Commission on Black Affairs representing African Americans and Black immigrants from other African countries. And there is just one Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs representing the Mexicans and many other people from South American countries. So even if all of them have representatives in the IDC, the addition of members will be just 3 to 4. So the claim of the opponents that an oversized and unmanageable membership will result is grossly exaggerated. So the second opposite opinion, is there a danger that a disqualified representative of the minority people can be obstructive to the function of the ITC? I have heard that opponents of the amendment may point out that while statistics and other observations show that the Asian Americans are active in both domestic and international trade, the participation of the Hispanics and the African Americans in international trade is either very minimal or not obvious. There is a great concern that the minority people in the clamor for representation in the ITC as a matter of prestige and dignity may send disqualified people to fill the quota. So the presence may sometimes impede or even disrupt the meetings of the ITC. But this is my opinion. The opponents ignore the fact that the Senate Bill 951 only states the Commission on Asian Affairs will have one representative appointed by the governor to sit in the ITC. It does not specify the ethnic background of the representative that he or she must be an Asian American in order to get qualified. This person can be of any ethnic background, having expert knowledge in Asian affairs and deemed worthy of such a representation by the Commission. So let me use an example to illustrate this point. So suppose Dr. Henry Kissinger is tired of the night on the Eastern Coast and chooses to settle down in Portland, Oregon. The Commission on Asian Affairs can invite him, if he favors such an invitation, to be a representative of the Commission in the ITC. So Dr. Kissinger has a post-break insight and knowledge of the Asian world. And if after the governor has agreed to appoint him a regular member of the ITC, Dr. Kissinger can still act as an associate member of the commission at the same time. So in this way, an effective liaison can be built up between the commission and the ITC. Similarly, other minority people can follow this example. If they cannot find a qualified person among the ethnic group, they can look for a well-qualified person elsewhere, such as a professor adept in African studies or a retired diplomat experienced in Hispanic affairs, etc. So the Senate Bill 951 has enough leeway for flexible and innovative changes. And I want to address to the last question. Can the involvement of the Commission on Asian Affairs be beneficial to the ITC? So people against this amendment may hold that if the economic situation of Oregon has undergone such a tremendous change that requires the government to put a stronger emphasis on Asian trade, the governor can simply appoint one or two more outstanding and well-qualified Asian Americans from the Oregon business community to become members of the ITC instead of admitting one representative from the Commission. So members of the Commission on Asian Affairs are of heterogeneous backgrounds, whereas members of the ITC are all experts on trade. This kind of infiltration of the Commission into the ITC can sometimes be vexing more than beneficial to the normal function of the committee. That is what I heard. Whether this concern is realistic, we have to examine the nature of the ITC. The ITC is purely an advisory committee, not an action group. Its responsibility is not information gathering either, which is a technical job that can be done by the staff of OEDD. So since the committee has no business project to implement it is not necessary that all its members should be highly experienced business experts. The greatest value of this committee lies in its analytical work and, more importantly, the innovative ideas it can generate. But unlike the United States and other affluent European countries in which trade has a relatively independent character, the trade in many Asian countries are highly intertwined with a lot of political and cultural factors. The Asian grassroots societies have many subtle ways to watch the plans of the government. Notorious examples abound in matters such as tax evasion or piracy of copyrights, etc. So many of their craftiness may have never been heard of by middle-class managers always sitting in comfortable offices or economic professors doing their analytical work based on statistics of some academic journals. Methods employed by big corporations in trading with the Asian countries may not be applicable to the small and the medium-sized businesses. We need people having different knowledge of Asian societies and inspiration for setting ingenious methods and appropriate trade policies. The participation of the Commission in the study of Asian trade can supplement the need of the ITC, since it has a heterogeneous membership having contacts with different sectors of the Asian society. So, lastly, the opponents may retort that instead of recruiting a representative of the Commission into ITC, the ITC can simply send its analysis report to the Commission for comment. But this is my opinion. By our experience, we know that decision-making is a synthesis of both art and logic. It is not like a machine that can be repaired when it is out of order. The example of cooking is very illustrative. When two chefs deliberate together how to make a dish, the final product is very different from the one which is wholly done by one chef, but has the taste modified by another chef by adding some seasonings. We need a representative of the Commission on Asian Affairs to get involved in the decision-making process of the ITC, so that his thinking is part of the dynamics of the group discussion. If the decision of the ITC is simply sent to the Commission for comment, the viewpoint of the latter will be externalized, and sometimes may merely be treated as a matter of formality in the face of the stubborn attitude of the ITC. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Can you give us a very different perspective, good analogy, and I appreciate that. You have a very good analytic mind.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Okay, and with that, and I'd like to call the last but not least, and Doris Kenwell. And I just want to put a record in it at this point. I want everyone to know, everyone knows that the governor, that's the Kitzhaber, not only she is doing a good job, but also she has been doing good, especially for the minority group. And even though the funding is concerned, she is very supportive of funding the Asian commissions, including many other commissions. I think it's good to keep this record and what it has done in this record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is...
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Doris Kenwell. I represent Economic Development Department of...
Yes, at this time, we are going to open a public hearing as a subcommittee, because we don't have a quorum at this point.
Great.
Yeah.
Good. I represent the Economic Development Department on legislative issues, and the International Trade Commission is a commission of representing part of the department. So what I wanted to do today was just very briefly call to your attention a letter that the International Trade Commission provided to the committee in response to some questions that you asked of them when they presented their biennial report on March 29 to the committee. And I think you have a copy in front of you. The second page of the letter that they have provided you delineates their comments about the Senate Bill 951 and the proposals in that bill, and I'd like to just quickly go through that and then answer any questions that you might have. The Commission supports the broadest possible participation in the form formulation of the state's international trade policies, thus assuring that the best ideas are heard and the strongest base of support is gained for the final recommendations. In achieving this broad base of participation, however, care should be taken to avoid duplicative and possibly conflicting responsibilities. The Commission believes that if the mandate of the Commission on Asian Affairs is explicitly expanded as proposed in Senate Bill 951 to include matters of trade policy, economic and tourism development, the likelihood of confusion is greatly increased. And I think you understand that as the Asian Affairs Commission was established, there now is some delineation of duties for them and in some ways compared to some of the duties that are articulated in Chapter 285 for the Economic Development Department and the International Trade Commission. So I think there is a little bit of confusion right now over those duties. As the state discovered approximately 10 years ago, when it substantially reduced the number of state commissions and committees, the proliferation of state-sanctioned groups with overlapping and conflicting jurisdictions results in inefficiency, inaction, and loss of interest by the participants.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Gordley.
I just have to say, and I know that Ms. Pinwell is the messenger here this afternoon, but I find that particular paragraph to be out of context, and I'm also finding some offense with the way in which this particular piece of information is included in this report, and I would like for that information to go back to the chair of the committee. I think what the testimony is has illustrated and what the Commission on Asian Affairs is asking us to consider is an opportunity to increase our trade relationships with a particular part of the world and to also take advantage of or to look at how, in fact, we develop our relationships so that trade can happen. And the way that this particular piece of information has been inserted, I think, is a red herring.
I understand, Senator Burton.
Thank you.
And I'll certainly deliver that kind of message to the members of the commission. I don't think they're opposed necessarily to the bill as it is written. I think they do have some suggestions, though, and they have not provided wording, but I think they do have some suggestions about wanting to maybe be clear about what is advisory and what is establishing duplicate responsibilities. That's the point I'm making. And I think they even spoke to it in the next paragraph that they presented. When they created the International Trade Commission, they authorized the commission to appoint working groups and task forces. And I think it's delineated in the bill that you have before you. It's in Section 3, Sub 6. It says the commission may appoint work groups and task forces as the commission considers appropriate to assist the commission in carrying out the duties of the commission under this section. And the work groups and task forces may include individuals who are not members of the commission. From the department's perspective, I think the commission has not moved to create a number of the kinds of task forces and advisory groups they might have. And I think that's why in the letter they sent to you, they think that it might be a good idea to provide task forces not just for the Asian representation, but maybe the European, all of the South American, Mexico trade relationships, those kinds of advisory committees that might be handled, that might be used to really develop good advisory information and to come forth to the commission, as they did with the African task force that was created during this last interim, and actually they're now moving to deliberate on some of those recommendations that were made. I guess that's their way of saying they prefer not to have an infinite number of additional members, but to have some mechanism where they can get some well-articulated advice from various entities that really are emerging and becoming more and more important. The one final thing I think I'd like to say is that international trade work out of the department over the last, 10, 15 years has actually been focused mostly on trade with Asia because that's where our opportunities have been. And that's, of course, why the state established offices in Taiwan, Korea, and in Japan, which are Asian, and is considering now some sort of a mechanism where we can further our trade with China. So to say that that is not of interest to the International Trade Department and the Commission is not really accurate. And they're just, I think they are just trying as a commission to be as fair as possible, but not to make the thing too cumbersome. So that's their perspective, and, you know, that's what I'm delivering to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope that the Asian, that the International Trade Commission, sometimes they are going into deep in modeling policy issues, since this deal has to do with their members. I think that if they want to talk about it, in my opinion, they should talk to the governor's office, not just directly on their own matters to decide either one way or another. I hope they stay neutral if possible on this particular issue. That's my personal opinion. I hope you can deliver my message to them and with the Senator Goldsmith's role.
I understand that. Yes. And I think they actually intend that the governor's office, they are communicating this letter to them, but they frankly know that it will be a discussion between the legislature and the governor, and they'll provide whatever support they can.
But I think, Mr. Chair, if I may address that, and again, you know, again, looking at the language in the letter and the paragraph next to the last one, it says the commission believes that there are better alternatives to achieve broad perspectives other than mandating cross-commission membership. Now, I read that to mean that they've got an opinion about this. And the effects of such a mandate, it goes on to say, would be to reduce participation in the discussions and to place a greater burden of attendance on members with multiple commission responsibilities. I don't know what that means, but it sure sounds like you don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes to the point that the previous witness was addressing very well in his analysis of what some of the opposition might be out there. I guess what I would like us to be really open to in our state, again with an eye toward the 21st century, is inclusion and really internalizing inclusion and all that that means in this state. We have a richness of talented people and skills and expertise that go unneeded, that go unnoticed, unused, untapped, because we don't have relationships and don't know that the people are there and that we could call on them and ask them to assist in any area of state government. We just happen to be talking about this particular one. So what I'm reacting to this afternoon is the tone of the letter, and I personally find the tone of the letter disappointing. But I think it's something that we can work with. It's okay to have that tone out there because it tells me this is what we need to work with and work on. And I think, again, if we can focus on what are the relationships we need to build in order to move our trade efforts forward in a way that will benefit the state and all of its communities, then we will look differently at who should be at the table when those discussions take place. And, you know, I'm as I've gotten into my 50s, I guess I just have become more frank about some things. When I walk into a room and I see the configuration of a table and I'm listening at who's having a public policy discussion, if I don't see enough women, if I don't see enough people of color, I know that whatever conclusions people arrive at are going to miss something. So I think that's a part and parcel of what this whole discussion is about this afternoon, and I know that I'm speaking to someone who really understands this, really understands these issues, and that you'll do a great job of taking the message back to those who need to hear it. These will be uncomfortable discussions at times, but that's okay. That's how we learn and grow, and so be it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, just in response to that, I haven't heard of a whole lot of negative comments as much as I heard today. That wasn't articulated to me. I'm sure it must be out there somewhere. It's troublesome to me as it is to everybody, and I guess that is the sort of thing that might go on when there's a little confusion about, you know, who does what. But I'll be glad to, you know, we'll talk and we can have more discussion about this as well as any of these other things. I appreciate your comments. Sure.
My perspective coming from how we can help the state.
Right.
And whether adding the commission to the international commission, the commissionization of here into the, whether it will help our economy, it will grow more trade. In that case, I'm going to support it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just looking at whether it will benefit to the state. And we shouldn't, I think as I share more, I seem to see more tough battles going on, which I don't like.
Mm-hmm. I have one final comment. I think the reason the governor's office isn't here today is that Katie Colbert would probably be the one to be here, and she's out of town until tomorrow. So if you have a further hearing, she'll be glad to participate, I'm sure.
And no doubt someone's over there listening.
Very possibly. Thank you.
Okay. With that, is there any other person who would like to testify on 951? If not, we will close the public hearing. If there is no more business. And then before I... close that. We have a new addition of our staff. Yes, Paula Merritt.
Yes.
She's doing a good job there, and from the first day today. And we want to know we are glad to have you with us, and thank you very much for working with us. And with that, we'll adjourn. Thank you.